had come to the Nihil.
"We are all the Republic,"
he said, spitting out the words.
"Whether we like it or not, eh?"
He looked at her, the eye in his mask seeming to glow.
"I never told you much about my family, and I doubt I ever will. But I came from something I wanted to escape. This ship was part of it, actually, until it all went bad. My father and I both got out. We worked hard, and we had a plan for the paths, for the Nihil, for all sorts of things."
He gestured at his mask.
"It was always gonna be like this. Since the day I was born, I thought I escaped. I didn't, though. Not really."
Lorna D shook her head. She just...
"I don't understand why you sent me out there after the flight recorder, Marcian. If you wanted the Republic to have it, why did I have to go after the damn thing?"
"So your Tempest would see you fail, Lorna D, and start thinking about new leadership,"
Marcian said.
"And so you'd have nowhere else to go. I'm going to need you, I think."
"For what?"
Marcian Rowe tilted his head, and she knew he was smiling again.
"You'll find out."
She had to get away, to think. It felt like Marcian had trapped her in a box, and she could barely understand its shape. It was like the Great Hall. The walls were invisible, but it didn't mean they weren't there.
"Look, Marcian,"
Lorna said.
"I'm gonna get back to my people. They had some questions. Like why you sent my whole Tempest to rescue a few strikes in the cloud. Kind of like overkill, you know?"
She pointed her thumb at the homesteader, the man they'd grabbed, the one remaining family member from the group Dense Cloud had grabbed. He was still unconscious, ankles and wrists all lashed up in binder cuffs, propped up against a crate in the hold.
"My feeling is that it has something to do with that guy. Fine, whatever. You don't need to tell me why he's so valuable. You can even run the ransom if you want. I don't care about the rule of three. You can have it all. Maybe just throw some of the proceeds back down my way so I can spread them around to my people."
Marcian Rowe walked across the hold, the sounds of his boots echoing off the Durasteel walls.
"This guy?"
he said, looking down at Otto Blythe. He pulled the lightsaber from his belt again, igniting it and bringing it down in the same motion. A golden slash right across the man. Dead in an instant. Cut apart. A weird smell filled the hold, and Lorna D wanted to get away from that particular odor as quickly as she could. But she was frozen.
"Marcian's lost his mind," she thought. "His entire mind."
"I don't care about that guy,"
he said.
"Never did."
Marcian Rowe shifted the lightsaber, pointing its blade a meter or so to the left at the other person Lorna D had pulled from the ship above Elfrona, the owner of the weapon Marcian had just used to murder someone, the dark-skinned Twi'lek Jedi. He was bound even more thoroughly than Blythe, triple-strength binders, chains, stun packs, and a gag. She was glad, too, because the man's eyes were not friendly. She'd heard a lot of stories about Jedi. Everyone had. She didn't know which were true, but she could now verify that at least one was false. Clearly, the Jedi could not shoot death beams from their eyes. Because if they could, then Marcian Rowe would be stone dead. She couldn't believe Marcian had taken the man's weapon and used it to kill someone right in front of him. It seemed like tempting fate, even with the Jedi all tied up. You never knew what they could do.
"I didn't give your crew paths to run that job on Elfrona to bring me a family of miners, Lorna D,"
Marcion Rose said.
I did it because that planet has a Jedi outpost. I figured there was at least a chance your crew might be able to bring me a Jedi. Why not try, right? Lo and behold, now I have one. Which is good, because a Jedi...
He deactivated the lightsaber and very ostentatiously hung it on his belt.
Is just what I need.
Chapter 42, Coruscant. Chancellor Lena So considered whether the choice she was making felt right. After everything learned and lost in the past several weeks, she was in her office on Coruscant, with Matari and Varu at her side, all three looking out through the broad viewport behind her desk at the endless cityscape beyond. She had no idea what the Targons thought about what they saw, but to her, the Coruscant skyline always felt like the Republic in miniature, always moving, always changing and evolving, endlessly deep and strange and infinite. At that moment, the sun was setting, and the lights were coming up on the buildings. Stars in the heavens, worlds in the Republic. Yes, she was making the correct decision. Lena turned away from the city world to face the people she had called to her office. The group she had met in Monument Plaza when this all began. A senator, an admiral, a secretary, and as always, Jedi. The Jedi were never anything less than helpful, solved every problem they were given, and many they were not. Without their assistance, there was no question the mystery of the Legacy Run would not have been solved as quickly or decisively. Many of their number had died trying to help the Republic, including Master Jorah Mali, whom she knew had been slated to run the Order's temple on the Starlight Beacon Station. They had sacrificed and fought and triumphed, as they nearly always seemed to. She loved the Jedi. But sometimes she wondered if they were too useful.
I am reopening the Outer Rim,
Chancellor So said. She pointed at her aide, Narelle Quo, his pale skin tinted orange in the light of the sunset.
Put out a statement to that effect immediately. Hyperspace transit through the territories is once again authorized. I'll use executive orders to temporarily ease taxation on those trade routes as well, which will help repair any economic damage caused by the quarantine. Just for a month or so, though, which should incentivize merchants to get their goods out there quickly. That will ease the shortages.
A quick glance at her transportation secretary.
Do you see any issues with that, Secretary Lorelia?
None, he said. The only potential issue is a shortage of Navidroids due to Kaventar's array on Hetzal. But I think we all agree that was well worth the expense. I've already asked manufacturers to ramp up production. Perhaps some sort of stimulus for them as well, just until the inventory levels come back.
We'll figure something out. That's good news, though. Speaking of Tar, I know he generated a report on other potential uses for his array before he headed off to work for the Santecas. Have you read it?
I have, Chancellor. Some brilliant ideas there. Could revolutionize hyper-travel, and even has applications in real space. If we can figure out how to do it in a way that doesn't require tens of thousands of rare, expensive droids.
Keep me posted, Jeffo. Could be there's a great work in it at some point. And of course, try to find a way to thank Kaventar. A medal or something. A high-level posting at one of the Republic universities, perhaps. A job, if you can find him one that would keep him interested. I hate to think of losing a mind like that to private industry when there's so much to be done in the Republic.
I will consider, the secretary said.
She turned her attention to Senator Noir, whose face had lit up the moment she said she was going to open the outer rim, and had stayed that way all through her conversation with Secretary Lorelia.
"Is it on a personal note?" Lena said. "I realize how trying this was for the worlds you represent. I appreciate your patience and theirs. I hope you will agree that everything we did was necessary for security and safety in the Republic."
He gave her a grave, dignified nod.
"Of course, Chancellor. I never thought otherwise."
Lena So had learned to keep her emotions off her face decades before. She was a politician, born and bred. Inwardly, though, her eyes rolled back so far, she was once again looking out at the Coruscant sunset through the window behind her. Noir turned to his aide, standing behind his seat with a datapad at the ready.
"I'll make a speech as well, Wataru. We'll need to thank the worlds for their patience, and let them know that the Nihil threat has been eradicated. Schedule a tour, too. I think we'll start with Hetzal, Abdalis, and Iriatu. The world's hit hardest by the emergencies, and then move to..."
"Senator, if I may..."
Admiral Cronara lifted his hand. Senator Noir looked at him, not hiding his annoyance at a military man daring to interrupt him.
"Admiral,
we don't know yet if the Nihil are gone.
I read your report, Cronara. Your task force destroyed hundreds of their ships in that engagement. You found their entire fleet, and you ended it. There hasn't been a single raid since. If that's not evidence, I don't know what is."
"Senator, respectfully, I think you saw what you wanted to see in that report. I can confirm that we destroyed a significant Nihil force. At this point, we have very little intelligence about their operations. We know they had hyperspace capabilities we still don't understand, but we don't know how they got them, how many there were, where they're based, if they have goals beyond just simple raiding."
He shrugged.
"Say whatever you want in your speech. It's not my problem. But if the Nihil aren't gone, and they start attacking worlds in the Outer Rim again, you'll look pretty foolish if you've already told your constituents they have nothing to worry about."
Chancellor So enjoyed that exchange very much. Senator Noir, perhaps less so. He turned back to his aide.
Revise the phrasing. Let's just say that great strides have been taken toward making the Outer Rim territories safe and secure. And we look forward to peace and prosperity in the months and years to come."
"You know what else you might mention, Senator?"
Chancellor So said. Senator Noir raised an eyebrow.
"The Starlight Beacon. It's going to open on time. I just got a report in from Shai Tenem. If the Nihil aren't in fact gone, or if anything else pops up out there, the beacon will be a big part of handling it. And the projection of Republic authority it represents will make it that much easier to negotiate the Quarren-Mon Calamari peace accords,"
she thought.
"And the beacon itself will serve as a communications relay that will increase the reliability of transmissions across the region and act as a linchpin for the rest of the new network. And once people see how effective it is, getting a vote through to authorize the other stations just like it will be simple."
Her great works falling into place one by one. The Republic was not one world. It was many, each unique in ways large and small. Solving one problem inevitably caused others. There were intractable cultural, historical, economic, and military conflicts among inhabitants of worlds. There were warlords and agitators and malcontents and other less easy to handle enemies, plagues and strange magical factions on hidden worlds who believed they should conquer the galaxy. And yes, even hyperspace anomalies. But the key was this. and Chancellor So believed it to her very soul, and had made it the cornerstone of her entire government. You could not solve those problems individually. It was ridiculous to even try. What you could do, however, was make the various peoples of this high era of the Galactic Republic see one another as people, as brothers and sisters and cousins and friends, or if nothing else, just as colleagues in the shared goal of building a galaxy that welcomed all, heard all, and did its best to avoid hurting anyone. Truly tried its best. If you could make that happen, then problems didn't have to be solved. Many would solve themselves because people believed in the Republic more than they believed in their own goals, and would be open to that magical word, compromise. That wonderful day had not yet come, not fully, and perhaps it never would. But she would work toward it with every hour and day she retained her office. All she wanted, truly, was for 5 words to live on past her term, even past her life. The words that had already become emblematic of her great works and so much more. Every time she heard them, her heart lifted. That was the goal. One idea. One sentiment. She could do it. Everyone could do it. Chancellor So knew it was true. 5 words. We are all the Republic.
Chapter 43. No Space. The Great Hall of the Nihil. The Nihil stood assembled, a host of a few thousand people, masked and terrifying. They watched, silent. The space above the Great Hall was a dome-shaped energy shield protecting the platform from the vacuum of No Space. Ordinarily, it was invisible, but now images played across it, projected by hovering comm droids.
For the Nihil!
Came Kossov's voice, loud and fierce, and then a response, shouted from 1,000 throats, all dead now.
The Battle of Kerr began, displayed in a series of images ranging from tactical displays to ship cam points of view to wider shots assembled by comms droid processing algorithms. The Nihil watched, as did Marcion Rowe, from the raised table at one end of the hall, with Lorna D and Pan Ata beside him. One seat at the high table remained empty for the one who was lost. The Eye and the Tempest Runners wore their masks, but Marcion's was new, ornate, with the suggestion of a crown and the Superstorm engraving subsumed within a circle of glowing red. The baleful gaze of a beast. Rowe's clothing, too, had changed. He now wore a heavy fur cloak, worn and ragged in spots. But the wear conveyed a sense of history, of battles survived and won. As it should, it was the cloak of Asghar Rowe.
Kossov believed he was taking his crews to save us all, to protect us, to keep the Republic from learning our secrets,
said the Eye of the Nihil.
It was a trap, a lie. You see how they came for him. The Republic and the Jedi hunted down Kossov's Tempest like vermin.
Murmurs through the crowd as the Nihil watched ship after ship destroyed by Republic attackers, all flying under the same banner they wore on their masks, their clothes, their bodies.
But look,
Marcion Rowe said, pointing up at the battle raging above them.
Look what Kossov and his people did!
Show them who we are!
Came Kossov's voice again, and the next phase of the fight began,
as the Nihil began to use the new aggressive tactics. Radiation bombs and waste sludge and explosive escape pods.
Our brothers and sisters refused to fight the way the Republic wanted them to,
Marcion Rose said.
They fought like the Nihil!
A roar of approval from the crowd. Not enough to shake the Great Hall. There was still too much uncertainty for that. But a start. The Jedi entered the fight, and once again the tide began to turn against the Nihil, as the Vectors whipped through the battle space, darting and firing their cannons. Another voice echoed above the Great Hall. This time, Marcion Rose.
I am the Eye, and I will give you what you need to defeat our enemies. These are the battle paths, my friends. And with them, you cannot lose.
The fight changed again. The ships of Kossov's Tempest began to leap from place to place. Impossible to hit. Taking down Skywings and Longbeams and Vectors. Excitement rippled through the watching Nihil. This was something new. Something powerful.
Yes,
Marcion Rose said.
The paths make us strong, but Kossov's numbers were too few. And there was only so much he could do, even with the gifts I gave him. But look what he did! Look what he and his people did!
The Nihil ships began to smash into the Republic vessels, exploding, causing horrendous damage even at the cost of their own lives. Now, a sense of alarm from the Watchers.
I did not expect this,
Marcion Rose said.
I don't know if Kossov ordered this, or our fellows just decided they had enough of their freedom being taken. Enough of the Republic telling us what to do, thinking they can control our planets and kill our people, and, well...
He gestured up at the display.
There is a point where every being breaks and chooses freedom over tyranny. Kossov's people did this for themselves, for each other, and for us.
The crowd had gone completely silent. Marcion gestured again, and the battle froze.
We are the Nihil,
Marcion Rose said. A few weak cheers, quickly fading into silence.
I am the Eye, Marcion Rowe. I am the Nihil. And so,
he said, holding out his hands to his people,
are all of you.
This is the moment,
Marcion Rowe thought.
Another step on the path.
Kossov and his people died so we could stay free. But that fight isn't over. The Republic will come for us, and the Jedi. We are no longer tempests, storms, clouds, strikes. We are one thing.
Marcion Rowe lifted his hands to his head and removed his mask. He stood there, looking out at the thousands of faces. His tool, his weapon, his army.
We are all the Nihil,
he said. Throughout the hall, more masks came off. Only a few at first, but then a flood. The heavy things dropping to the floor with rattling thuds. Marcion Rowe let his gaze wash across all of them, seeing the eagerness, the understanding. He turned to look at Pan Ata and Lorna D. Their masks were still on.
Now,
he said quietly. They glanced at each other. Marcion wondered if it would be Knives or if these two would get to live. He hoped for the latter. there was a great deal of work to do. Slowly, the two remaining Tempest Runners took off their masks. Pan Eta stood stiffly, his huge tusked head expressionless. Not that Marchion was very good at reading Doatini emotions. Lorna D feigned nonchalance, shaking out her leku. Marchion Ro turned back to the waiting Nihil. With a flourish, he lifted his mask into the air.
For Kassiv!
He shouted. And this time, there was an answering cheer. A torrent of sound. A release of tension and anxiety. They thought everything was going to be all right. None of them had ever seen his face before. It didn't matter that they did now. None of them knew who he was. He wasn't Marchion Ro either. His name was... It didn't matter. Where he came from was gone, other than the lessons it had taught him, and a few tools he had stolen from it when he left. Marchion Ro lowered his mask, and as he did, a set of small servitor droids hovered up from behind the stage, each holding a metal bowl in its actuator arms. They floated out above the assemblage, all but one, which stopped near Marchion. Kassiv sacrificed himself to preserve the Nihil way of life, as did his Tempest, Marchion said. He showed us the way. Whatever we have been, our wealth, our power, it's just beginning. Do you know why? Let me show you. Another tap of a control on his belt, and the display being projected by the comms droids changed. No longer a frozen shot of the final moments of the Battle of Kerr. It was now a beautiful, complex image of the galaxy, in all its breadth and splendor. A slowly rotating spiral filled with countless worlds, countless riches, countless opportunities. The galaxy. But when I look at it, I do not see only stars and planets. I see a storm. The image began to spin faster, and now it did look like an enormous weather system. A hurricane rotating around a central eye. We are all the Nihil. We don't just ride the storm. We are the storm! Understanding was beginning to dawn on their faces. Awe, even. Now we will own the storm! Marchion cried. We've kept ourselves to the outer rim. Didn't want to attract too much attention. Didn't want to spoil a good thing. That is over. We are going to go as hard and far as we can. And we are going to take what we want! Marchion gestured up toward the storm, spinning above them all. The Nihil are going galaxy-wide! Now, another cheer. No hesitation. Marchion Ro began to pace back and forth across the stage, pointing at individual Nihil as he spoke, singling them out, watching them grin as he did, the looks of jealousy on their colleagues' faces. I have an archive of paths that will take us all across the galaxy, Marchion said. We can go anywhere we want, take anything we want. Lina So and her Republic and the Jedi tried to destroy us, but Kassiv's sacrifice bought us time. Time to build, time to plan, time to grow our numbers. A day will come when we will teach the Republic that we cannot be destroyed. They will fear the Nihil. And if they try to take our freedom again, We will tear them apart. Marcion reached out to the servitor droid hovering nearby and dipped his fingers in the bowl it was holding. They came out red. By the blood of the one who gave everything for us, Kossuth. Marcion took three fingers and drew them down his face in jagged lines. Lightning. Blood. The servitor droid swooped down into the crowd, and he saw the Nihil repeating this gesture, taking the blood and swooping it down their faces. Three jagged lines. Marcion Rowe didn't know if any of them were curious as to how one person could hold this much blood, or where he had gotten it if Kossuth had died somewhere out in space. But it didn't matter. What mattered was that they would never ask those questions, because doubt could be perceived as weakness. And the Nihil stayed strong by removing what was weak.
Round and round it goes,
he thought, looking up at the galaxy, gazing into the storm. Go, Marcion Rowe said. Bring me more Nihil, as many as you can. He grinned. And I will give you everything. Mari Santeca was asleep. She looked peaceful, wrapped in a cocoon of wires and actuator arms and monitoring systems. All the equipment her medical pod required to keep the ancient woman alive.
Get your rest, my dear,
Marcion Rowe said, placing his palm flat on the pod, feeling the warmth emanating from the machine.
You have so much work to do.
She looked fetal, tiny and wizened on her side, her hands curled up against her chest. The whole pod was like a womb in reverse, though he wasn't sure there was another human in the galaxy further from the womb than this woman. Marcion had told the Nihil the truth. He did have an archive of paths, thousands of them. Mari had spent the decades charting hidden routes all across the galaxy, and they were all stored in a database, able to be called upon at will. The Nihil could appear anywhere he wanted, even atop Chancellor So's palace, if he chose. He wondered how long Mari would last. Long enough, he thought. He had found a supplier for the new miracle drug, Bacta, which would probably help. It came from a world in the Hetzal system, which made Marcion laugh. He'd almost destroyed that planet. Marcion Rowe turned away from the sleeping Mari Santeca. He left the chamber and descended three decks in his flagship. He walked through beautiful arched passageways, through large galleries where once sermons were preached and dreams were built, and families worked and planned and considered a better way to live, until they didn't. Now, the gaze electric was empty, haunted. At last, after a long trek through the huge vessel, Marcion Rowe arrived in an area with a very different feel from the tranquil, subtly lit room where Mari Santeca whiled away her endless years. Here, the lights were bright. The edges were sharp. Everything was reflective. There was nowhere to look to gain peace, and even closing your eyes could only do so much against the glare. The walls were metal, as were the floors. 8 cells. 7 held prisoners delivered to him by Pan Eta. Nobodies. Snatched from a passenger transport headed to Travnin. Ordinary people, who certainly did not deserve imprisonment on the Eye of the Nihil's flagship. Too bad. Life was rarely about what you deserved. 7 of the occupied cells were wired to the ship's electrical system and programmed to shock their prisoners at random intervals and intensity levels. Between the shocks and the lights, sleep was impossible. Being placed in a cell on the prison deck of the Gaze Electric meant anger, pain, fear, and eventually, madness. And all of it designed specifically for the man in the eighth cell, the Jedi. Marcion Rowe walked down the hall, passing the poor wretches in the torture cells, coming to the last. The Jedi looked up, his face calm, but his eyes were tired. He could act as serene as he liked, but the emotional turmoil he must be sensing from the other prisoners was clearly achieving the intended effect. He had to be in pain, too. He had a badly broken leg. And Marcion had made exactly none of the high-tech medical facilities just a few decks up available to the man. The Twi'lek moved quickly, lifting a hand with two fingers extended and speaking a single sentence.
"You will release us all," he said.
Marcion felt the pressure of the Jedi's intention washing across his mind. He wanted to do what the Twi'lek asked. Why wouldn't he? Because he was Marcion Rowe. He smiled. "It's not going to happen, Jedi," he said. "My family knew all about you people. They told me what you could do and how to resist it." He gestured vaguely toward the other cells. "They're not getting out either. If they die, I'll just bring in more. Their job is to fill this entire deck with pain and anger and fear. Makes it hard for you to think, doesn't it? Hard for you to call on the Force." He leaned back against a nearby wall and crossed his arms. "My grandmother told me how to do it. She learned from hers. You don't imprison Jedi behind bars. You do it with pain. I never had a chance to try it, but it seems like it works well enough." One of the other prisoners moaned. Not even enough energy left to scream, Marcion thought. The Jedi did not look. His eyes never left Marcion Rowe's face.
"What's your name?"
he asked.
"I don't want to just keep calling you Jedi."
"Lodan Greatstorm,"
the Jedi answered. Marcion's eyes went wide. He pushed himself off the wall.
"Lodan Great Storm?"
he said.
"By the path, that's too perfect. It's truly a great pleasure to meet you, my friend. I think we will accomplish wonderful things together."
"What things?" Lodan said. "Why are you doing this?"
Marcion laughed.
"You want my grand plan, Jedi? I don't do that. Plans can fail at any step along the way. I have a goal, and goals can be achieved in any number of ways, as long as you get where you want to in the end. The roads you took don't matter. It's all the same path."
"Your goal, then?"
the Jedi said. Marcion thought for a moment, considered his words.
"When my father died, I inherited a disorganized, broken organization. The Nihil had power, but it spent most of its time fighting within itself. It could never reach its full potential, and it had to, if it would ever become the weapon I need. My father tried to change things, but he failed. And then he was murdered."
Another moan from one of the torture cells. Marcion supposed the shock cycle had just triggered again.
I almost didn't want to try at all. For a long time, I just carried on the same role he had. The Eye of the Nihil. Keeper of the Paths. I got rich doing it. It was fine. And then, you came.
The Jedi's eyes narrowed. Marcion chuckled.
Oh, not you specifically, Loden Great Storm. I mean the Republic, building its starlight beacon out in my territory. Invading, taking over with all its rules and laws and particular brand of freedom that isn't free at all. And you Jedi, always just behind, absolutely convinced that every action you take is right and good. My family learned that to its cost long ago.
But we have met before,
the Jedi said.
In a way.
His face was very, very cold. His dark green skin seeming to absorb the bright lights of the prison deck.
I recognize your voice,
Loden said. Marcion grinned.
There's a homesteader family about 30 kilometers to the southwest of town, he said.
His voice suddenly anxious, affected.
Two parents, two kids. You gotta go rescue them, Jedi. You just gotta.
Marcion Rose slammed backward, hitting the bulkhead hard. His head cracked against the Durasteel. Nothing had touched him, but he knew it was the Jedi. Loden slumped back. The effort to use the Force had clearly exhausted him.
Not quite enough,
Marcion said, gingerly touching the back of his skull.
Try that again, and I'll kill one of the prisoners.
The Jedi did not respond.
As I said, many paths, one goal. Hetzal was mine too. I sent one of my ships to intercept the Legacy Run. A storm ship. They had no idea. I just needed an accident, a disaster, something to put the Nihil on the Republic's radar.
Why would you do that?
Loden asked.
Everything and everyone is a tool,
Marcion Rose said.
I will use them however I need.
He smiled, a predator smile. Though this Jedi was dangerous too, and he could not allow himself to forget it. His family had trusted the Jedi once, and it cost them everything.
They will come for me,
Loden Greatstorm said.
My order, and if I am dead.
He tilted his head, and a little smile played around his mouth.
Then they will come for you.
Marcion Rowe reached inside his tunic and pulled out an object of stone and metal. A rod, three hands long, carved and incised with symbols, screaming faces, fire, chains. It looked as if it had been melted once and reforged. As his hand touched the object, it began to glow, a sickly purple color that somehow overpowered the star-bright lighting of the prison deck. This thing was almost as fully to blame for what happened to his ancestors as the Jedi. But that was an old story, and this was a new time. He could accomplish what they had not. The rod grew warm under his hand. It felt almost alive, breathing. He showed it to Loden, whose eyes narrowed. In the purple light cast by the object, the Jedi's face looked strange, dead.
I'm not worried about your order, If they think they can take me...
He smiled at this Loden Greatstorm. So brave. The perfect Jedi Knight. So unafraid.
Let them come.
Chapter 44, The Starlight Beacon.
The station was a wonder, gleaming in the void, an intricate gemstone sparkling in space, one of the largest off-world structures ever built. Its construction had taxed even the limitless resources of the Galactic Republic, but that was the point. Even the Outer Rim territories deserved the best of the Republic. We are all the Republic. This was the Starlight Beacon, and it was, at last, complete. Not a day early, and not a day late. It was designed to serve many purposes, to attend to the diverse needs of the many citizens of the Republic in this region. Perhaps two cultures required neutral ground upon which to negotiate a dispute. The beacon would provide. Or if that dispute turned heated and threatened to turn from words to war, the beacon was a military base with a strong contingent of peacekeepers staffed on a rotating basis from the worlds of the Republic Defense Coalition. Its superstructure was 19% triazurite, a rare material that boosted transmission signals, allowing it to serve as a massive relay point to facilitate better, faster communications among the peoples of the Outer Rim. It was a hospital. It was an observatory. It was a research station. It was a bustling market, trading in goods from across the rim and beyond. The Starlight Beacon was open to all citizens, built to allow them to experience the Republic in all its grand diversity. From subsonic whisper fiber concerts by Chadra fan masters, to Mon Calamari ocean dancing, to modules demonstrating the flora and fauna of worlds from Kashyyyk to Koriva. This was the Republic. The exhibits constantly changed and updated to provide a truly representative experience. And of course, there was no Republic without Jedi. The Starlight Beacon housed the largest temple outside Coruscant to serve as a hub for the Order's activities in the Outer Rim and beyond. Designed by renowned Jedi architect Paolo Hidalla and staffed by some of the most experienced members of the Order, the Starlight Temple provided everything younglings, padawans, Jedi Knights, and Jedi Masters might require to serve the people and the Force. The Jedi Quarter lacked a leader after the tragic loss of Master Jorah Mali at the battle against the Nihil, but perhaps that too might be addressed. Luminaries from around the galaxy had arrived to mark the occasion of the station's dedication. The Third Horizon, hero vessel of so many recent events of galactic import, had already docked, its passengers released. And here, too, was the Jedi cruiser Ataraxia, permanently seconded to the Starlight Beacon as the Order's mode of transport to and fro. It had gathered Jedi from Coruscant and beyond, bringing them here to witness a great moment that would change the galaxy forever. The visitors disembarked, all dressed for celebration and ceremony. The Jedi in their bright sashes of cerulean and vermilion and purple, draped across the gold and white of their tunics, with the symbol of the Order shining out, the rising light of the Force. The Republic diplomats and warriors and leaders of industry and culture wearing whatever best reflected the occasion. A spectacle of chatter and enjoyable pomp. The beacon staff took them in groups to demonstrate the station's many features. Pride and optimism on every face, visitors and guides alike. Bell Zedifar had come from Elfrona, along with Indira Stokes and Porter Engel. The surviving members of the Blythe family were invited to this event, but declined, choosing instead to return to their relatives on Alderaan. Bell was lost. He did not understand what had happened, how his master could be with him one moment and then not. Indira, who had taken him as her Padawan until some other arrangement might be made, believed Loden Greatstorm was dead. Bell did not. Technically, he could take the vows to become a knight back on Coruscant, but he could not countenance doing such a thing. Loden Greatstorm was to preside over the ceremony, as was right and proper. But now, how? Ember padded along at Bell's side. Perhaps unorthodox, but who would tell the Padawan he must be even more alone? Porter Engel walked along with the group, quiet, and seemed to barely notice the wonders of the Starlight Beacon. He was remembering what it felt like to be the Blade of Bardota, and remembering why he once chose to never be that person again. Indira thought about every decision she made during the rescue attempt on Alfrona, and wondered if some other path could have saved Loden and Otto Blythe. She did not know, and never would. Led by another guide, with a different group, Stellion Geos, Avar Chris, and Elzar Mann walked through the station's bright corridors together, as they often were whenever the business of the Order allowed it. There were rumors about who would lead the station's Jedi Quarter now that Master Molly was gone, but the trio did not gossip. They were Jedi. All Masters now, too. The Council had finally indicated that they would allow Elzar Mann to take the vows. He would be able at last to see what awaited him in the depths of the endless sea that was the Force. They passed the Trandoshan Jedi Skeer, who had spent much time on the beacon during its construction, and so did not require a tour. He stood at a viewport, looking out at space beyond. Avar offered a greeting, but Skeer did not respond. He had survived the Battle of Kerr, and his missing arm was slowly regrowing in the manner of his species, but the wound in his heart, at the loss of Master Jorah Mali, was proving harder to repair. In the huge assembly room at the heart of the beacon, Nib Asik and Buryaga watched as Chancellor Lena So made her way to a dais in the center of the chamber. She walked side by side with Yariel Poof, a master on the Jedi Council. Every prominent Jedi in the galaxy was aboard the station, even Yoda, which surprised some. Ordinarily, the ancient master avoided non-essential social gatherings with determined glee. But here he was, with the class of younglings he had taken under his tutelage in recent months. His reasons for attending the dedication of the Starlight Beacon were his own. Yoda kept his own counsel. All around the chamber, many more people had gathered, the guides bringing their charges to the room as the tours ended for the primary event of the day. Mikael Sutmani, Joss and Pika Adrin, Keventar, Admiral Kronara, even Chief Inaman and Lieutenant Peoples, Jedi prodigy Venestra Rowe, and her newly acquired Padawan, Imri Kantaros, just arrived from their own encounter with the Nihil at Weevo. Senators and ministers and presidents and more, people from stations low and high. Thousands of people had gone to extraordinary lengths to ensure this moment happened, and as many as possible were present today. Those who could not, or chose not to attend, were given access to a secure holochannel to allow them to see and listen in real time. Chancellor So reached the dais. Cam droids hovered, recording the moment. She spoke.
"You know, I envision a galaxy of great works, connected and inspiring, and filled with peace for all citizens. I believe this is possible. Not because of me, or any special ability of mine. I believe it is possible because of us. Because we can and will work together to achieve it. We are, every one of us, a great work. I see a galaxy where we use our strengths to shore up each other's weaknesses. Where we understand and celebrate our differences and hold them up as valuable. We are a republic where every voice matters, whether in the core or on the farthest planet at the edge of the rim.
she continued, addressing the sacrifices made to bring safety to the Outer Rim and allow the station to be completed. The deaths of Hedda Kassett, Loden Greatstorm, Bel Zedifar blinked hard at this, Mervyn Getter, Vel Borta, Captain Finial Bright, and many more were acknowledged. A memorial was proposed, another great work, for all those killed in the Legacy Run disaster and the emergencies that followed. A multi-piece sculpture, with works placed at the site of the emergencies in Hetzal, Iriadu, and Abdalis, containing the names of all who died. Lena So spoke for precisely the right amount of time, and concluded with these words.
This station will be a symbol of the Republic in the Outer Rim, a place where we will celebrate our union and help each other to make it grow. It will send out a signal for anyone in this sector to hear, at any time. The beacon of the Republic, the sound.
Here she paused, and the cam droids captured sincere optimism on her face. This was not a politician. This was a woman who believed every word she was saying.
Of hope.
Across the atrium, against the stars, lightsabers ignited. Hundreds in all the colors of the Jedi Order. A salute held high. In the space outside the station, anyone who looked would see a surging glow rush out from the beautiful open space at its heart, pushing back the darkness. The light of the Jedi. The beacon activated. A signal, a sound, a chime, a tone that anyone with even the most rudimentary equipment could hear for hundreds of parsecs around the station. Anyone who is lost, afraid, confused, hopeless, they could tune in, they could listen, and the sound would help them find their way. The Starlight Beacon, the first of many, all was well.
Epilogue, The Enemy.
This is a beautiful place, Elzar Mann said. Avar Kriss was at his side. They had left Stellan Geos behind at the dedication, deep in conversation with several council members. Elzar and Avar walked along a path through one of the garden modules on the Starlight Beacon, a huge transparent steel bubble through which a long spiraling walkway had been built. The base of the sphere was filled with the native soil of a world called Quale, a small, low-gravity planet on the edge of the Outer Rim. From that soil grew trees, tall and thin and elegant, reaching all the way from the module's base to its top, some 300 meters above. Descending from the bright blue branches of those trees, a drapery of vines, rippling ribbons stretching from crown to ground. These were varied shades of red and orange, graceful gradients running their lengths. Air currents stirred the vines, so they washed gently back and forth, their fragrance like incense. The spiral path let one walk through these vines as they swirled and parted, tiny insects and birds bright with bioluminescence flitting between like sparks, each tree its own ecosystem. At the center of the garden, with space looming beyond the transparasteel, the effect was something like standing inside a campfire, looking out at the night.
Yes, it is,
Avar said.
And all ours, Elzar said. No one else seems to have found it yet.
It won't last,
Avar said.
I'm sure people will leave the party and find their way here soon enough. Couples looking for quiet spots to be alone, probably.
Then let's enjoy it while we've got it, eh?
They kept ascending, the sound of the flame ribbons washing through the chamber.
Look at us, huh? Just a couple of Jedi masters taking a quiet moment together. Can you believe it? Sometimes I never thought it would happen.
Eivor smiled at him.
I knew the Council would promote you eventually, she said. It was never a question.
Easy for you to say. You made Master a few years ago.
Hey, the Council knows talent when they see it. When will it happen?
Soon, probably. Only to stand before the Council back on Coruscant. It feels like a formality, really. I can't imagine my life will change as much as it did at the last elevation.
True. The jump from Padawan to Jedi Knight, that's where it all really sinks in. The choice of it.
Her voice trailed off. Elzar suspected they were both thinking about the same thing. Shared moments as Padawans. Tolerated and understood, and even common, but things to be left behind. Once one ascended to become an adult in the Order. They hadn't discussed those moments, not in a very long time, and never with more than an oblique reference, but they were never very far away from the other's mind, especially when they were together. Those times, many years in the past, seemed very present just then. Eivor stopped.
It took Elzar a step to realize she wasn't keeping pace,
and he turned to look back at her.
He raised an eyebrow.
She held out her hand. He took it, held it up, looked at it, then looked at Eivor Kriss, his friend. The look she gave him was like that sea he found inside himself. The force, deep and endless, and impossible to fully comprehend. You could drown in it.
We are Jedi, he said.
We are,
she replied. She looked away and let go of his hand, and he was no longer drowning.
But perhaps some part of him wished he was.
They kept walking.
They gave me the station,
Eivor said.
What?
I have command of the Jedi contingent on the Starlight Beacon, with Master Jorah gone. They asked me to take over. I guess I impressed the Council after what happened in Hetzal, and everything after, and...
Yes, you are very impressive,
Elzar said, his voice soft. A little higher on the path, walking through the flames.
I have work on Coruscant, Elzar said. Research in the archives. What we achieved in Hetzal has given me all sorts of ideas about new ways the light side might speak to us. I know the Council doesn't always understand the things I try to do, but I'm a master now. I feel like this is my chance to really demonstrate how useful I can be to the Order.
Yes,
Eivor said, her voice quiet as well.
We won't be seeing each other as often, Elzar said. Do you think we got too used to spending time together? Was that a mistake?
No,
she said, her voice certain.
I agree.
And we'll stay in touch. Yes, we can speak whenever we want. Chancellor So's comm relay project will make that easier than ever.
Of course, he said.
They had reached the top of the path, the end of the spiral, where an exit led back to the rest of the station. The sounds of celebration could be heard, dim and inviting.
Sounds like it's ramping up. You want to put away a few glasses of whatever they've got? I wouldn't mind dancing either. Should we go dance, Jedi Master Elzar Man?
He wondered what she thought of the look he was giving her just then. If she might be drowning a bit too.
I'll be along in a bit, he said. It's nice here, and I don't know when I'll get to see this spot again.
All right, she replied.
Eivor hesitated, then smiled, full and open and honest, and walked away. Elzar watched her go, then turned and looked out at the stars, at the emptiness of space, the deepest sea of all. Below him, the flame trees churned, rustling and whipping. It was like standing atop an inferno. He let his consciousness roam, out into the darkness beyond, looking, looking. The Force seized his mind. Awful visions flashed before his eyes. Things he could not understand. Cast in a sickly purple light. Jedi. Many he knew. Friends and colleagues. Horribly mutilated. Fighting battles they could not win. Against awful things that lived in the dark. Things that lived in the deep. The Jedi, those who survived, were fleeing. Not retreating, but fleeing. The vision spiked into his mind. The Force screaming some sort of warning or prophecy at him. Shearing through his consciousness. And they would not stop. Elzar fell to his knees. Blood dripping from his nose. This did not feel like an unknowable, avoidable vision of the future. This felt inevitable. Certain. Evil, horror, sweeping across the galaxy like the tide. He saw Jedi dying, screaming. And himself, last of all, unable to escape what was coming. Slowly, agonizingly, the vision receded. Elzar returned to himself. He gasped, and more blood splattered the deck. What had he just seen? What had he seen? The worst was not the chaos, the battles, the pain, the unknown monstrous horrors surging out of the dark. It was what he had seen on the face of every single Jedi the Force had shown him. The greatest enemy of all, fear.
This is Mark Thompson. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, Light of the Jedi, The High Republic by Charles Soule. This program was produced and directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Nick Martorelli. Post-production and sound mixing by Paul Goodrich and Justin Kilpatrick at Merlin Studios. Star Wars, Light of the Jedi, The High Republic is a production of Lucasfilm Limited and registered or trademarked where indicated. Copyright 2021. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production, copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Penguin Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.